Xers, radio buffs, and all ships at sea. This is Phil Wayne for MarketScope, the monthly audio column that puts a microscope to some unsuspecting radio dial somewhere across the great fruited plain. Last month, we had a little fun and made some of you the stars, so to speak. This month, we're back in San Diego, soaking up the sunshine and dialing our way up the AM band. Now, here's the guy who did all the work, Mark Marino.
Thank you, Phil. Let's head back south of the border to Tijuana and hear what DXers in the West will be able to pick up on 860.
Con música de pegue, Radio 86. La poderosa, poderosa, poderosa.
Bien, amigos, ya son las 8 con un minuto y nos vamos a ir hasta la Ciudad de México para llevarles a todos ustedes la hora nacional. XMO Radio 86, La Poderosa, que transmite desde Tijuana, se une a la gran red nacional de microondas y les llevamos este programa de México, La Hora Nacional.
Estamos de nuevo con usted. Juntos somos la voz de México.
Family Radio has a footprint in the San Diego market, more specifically El Cajon, and the frequency 910.
With an eternal perspective, this is the inspirational voice of Family Radio.
Your dial is set for the sound of the new life. Listener-sponsored KECR, KECR-FM, El Cajon.
Some candidates to replace Logan as department head.
Yes, sir, right here. First on the list is Cummings.
There's supposed to be a station at 950 from Tijuana, XEKAM. For the past couple of years, they ran a number of different formats. They were the flagship station of the Financial Broadcasting Network. They also carried Sun Radio for a long time. And after that, they ran live brokered talk shows ranging from vitamins, a gay show, and oldies overnight. They've been off the air since April 14th, 1992, and a few months before that, the FCC pulled their North American satellite license. It's unknown as to the status of XEKAM, what has happened, or what is happening now. As we move up the dial, we hear a station that, despite its low power and a surface area restricted to the North County, is doing quite well.
Ask the Experts, weeknights at 6 on AM 1000 KCEO.
It's 8:39, 21 minutes now before the hour of 9 o'clock. Good morning, everybody, and welcome to our final segment of Money in the Morning for this Monday. It is the 18th of January, 1993. Going to go to open phones right now. Time for your calls, your questions, and your comments. Use me, use this program as your radio resource for financial information. Our lines are open right now in the North County at 729-1000, 729-1000 in the North County, 586-1000 for the rest of San Diego County. Make it pretty easy for you, don't we? 729-1000 in the north, 586-1000 in the south. Whatever you want to talk about right now, that's what we'll talk about, whether it's questions about investments, about consumer-related matters, a personal finance question, municipal bonds, mutual funds, whatever you want to talk about, we'll talk about it right now on the program, so join us. Paul Hoffer will be here after the news at 9 o'clock with his program, talking about mortgages and refinancing. A lot of activity, a lot of discussions going on there, so get ready with your questions and call in and talk to Paul about that after the news.
The Don McDonald Show, weeknights on AM 1000 KCEO.
It's 8:48 right now as we continue. Get ready to wrap up this edition of Money in the Morning. I'm George Chamberlain. Let's get another Wall Street report. We go out to Prudential Securities and Chuck Anderson. Chuck?
The market is little changed in moderate semi-holiday trading. The industrial average is at 32.
And that's a page from history, and I'm Rod Page, wishing you well.
Rod Page commentary is brought to you today by Escondido Motors.
Night Talk, 9 o'clock weeknights on AM 1000 KCEO. AM 1000 KCEO. Vista.
Good morning, KCEO News Time, 9 o'clock.
USA Radio Network News. This is Therese Arena.
The accident occurred at 3300 West 3rd Avenue. It's a two-train collision.
I'm Janet Flynn for AM 1000, KCEO Traffic.
1000 KCEO. Good morning. The news time now approaching 9:05. The death toll continues to mount in the wake of heavy rains across Southern California. Six people are dead, a baby girl missing in Riverside County. The National Weather Service has posted tornado watches for most of the Southern California region today. That includes all of San Diego.
San Diego now has its own Spanish radio station at 1040 on the dial. DXers wishing to hear WHO in the San Diego area are going to have to strain a lot harder.
K-U-R-S. San Diego, la única estación en español transmitiendo con el más nítido sonido AM estéreo desde San Diego para Tijuana, Orange y Los Ángeles. Somos K1040.
Radio San Diego.
Qué grande es mi razón de estar contigo.
From Tijuana, XPRS puts out a booming signal on 1090.
Radio Mexa.
1090.
XPRS, Rosarito, Baja California.
Avanzamos a las 11 de la noche, Radio Express, síganse reportando a nuestras líneas telefónicas, 520-1090, 520-1091 y la 92. Vamos a ver quién nos llama. Buenas noches.
Bueno.
Sí, dígame.
Quiero mandar un saludo para todos los de Jalisco.
A toda la gente de Jalisco, muy bien. ¿De parte de quién?
¿Eh?
¿De parte de quién?
El Roberto.
¿En qué parte me escucha, Roberto?
Aquí de Carson.
Ándale, pues, gracias por reportarse.
Hola, pues.
Bye. Bye.
KSDO, San Diego's news station.
It's quarter past. You're listening to KSDO AM 1130 News Talk Radio. Top stories on a Monday.
Efforts to rescue a man trapped in a cliff in Terrassada have been successful. We'll have an update.
No reaction yet from the Iraqi government to today's double attack against Iraq. Targets were aimed at missile sites and anti-aircraft batteries.
A Turkish news agency reports about 300 people are believed trapped under snow following an avalanche in northeastern Turkey.
And more Marines from Camp Pendleton returning home from Operation Restore Hope in Somalia.
KSDO's meteorologist Sean Boyd tells us tornado and flood watch this morning. Showers heavy at times with possible thunderstorms this morning. There's even been lightning. Decreasing this afternoon, partly cloudy tonight then, and mostly sunny on Tuesday. That's right. Highs in all areas today, 57 to 63. Right now we have rain all around the area, heavy in some areas. Right now 59 degrees at Lindbergh Field.
Bernie Myers, George Riley, and the KSDO Morning Crew. Before you know it, Binkowski will be here. We'll have news and traffic and sports and Bill Holland after this.
You're listening to San Diego's most listened to morning news program on KSDO, AM 1130, News Talk Radio.
At Bank of America, we've noticed...
KSDO News Time, 522.
An early morning report from Bill Holland.
Well, this is one of those partial holiday. Government offices and most banks and nearly all U.S. institutions will be closed. But the stock and the bond markets are going to be open. The question is, will there be any players?
We would appreciate an anonymous tip, a call. Let us know which direction, where we can find some more evidence on these cases, and maybe we can make a few more of them.
On the Crime Beat, I'm Wade Douglas on KSEO, AM 1130, News Talk Radio.
Be listening at the same time every Monday for reporter Wade Douglas on the Crime Beat. I'm Beat here on KSDO AM 1130 News Talk Radio. And now with this morning's medical report, here's Dr. Dean Adell.
You think you have nice ears, but perhaps they're candidates for plastic surgery.
And we are getting some lightning strikes around town, too. I'm Monica Zek with traffic every 10 minutes, mornings and afternoons on KSDO AM 1130 News Talk Radio.
KSDO, travel time 531.
Minneapolis will get up to 20 with no cloud cover. Going to be a bright day there. London, cloudy in 55. San Francisco has rain in 55. Boston, sunny in 27. Atlanta, partly cloudy up to 45.
Business and sports, and KSDO's meteorologist Sean Boyd tells us, yep, rain heavy at times, thunder and lightning this morning, a tornado and flood watch in effect. Yeah, right now with the thunder and lightning and the rain, we have 59 degrees at Lindbergh Field.
KSDO, San Diego.
6 o'clock.
From ABC News, I'm Doug Limerick. Strike three on Iraq. American and Allied aircraft bombed targets in both southern and northern Iraq this morning.
Next is 50,000-watt KCBQ. Their FM runs oldies from the 60s and 70s, but the AM runs the cool gold format.
Southern California's AM 1170.
July of 1958 and from Philadelphia. A group originally called the Tornadoes. Hit number one is the Silhouettes with that one, Get a Job. Hey, we got about 22 minutes ahead of the top of the hour with JT. So glad you're listening tonight. I have got more great 50s rock and roll ahead like Chuck Berry, Sam Cooke, and the Isley Brothers.
It's cold sea.
Serving Southern California for over four decades. Stereo AM 1170, KCBQ, San Diego.
The 1210 spot in the market features a paid religion format.
Currently it's 47 in East County, 50 degrees downtown, and 47 at Cape Reyes.
KPRZ, San Marcos, Poway, San Diego. The following program is furnished by Insight for Living.
Today on Insight for Living, Chuck Swindoll with
KPRZ has a booming signal into the San Diego market, as does KSON on 1240. And although they only run 250 watts, I can hear them during the day in Long Beach.
50 degrees at KSON and KSON FM, San Diego, a division of Jefferson Pilot Communications. Something interesting this morning when the Bushes move out of the White House tomorrow, and Millie goes with them.
That sounds pretty funny when the Bushes move out of the White House tomorrow.
They do.
Hey, Millie!
How did Chip get in here?
Get down! Bad dog!
And Millie goes with them.
Gee whiz.
It'll mark the first time, Michael, in 71 years that we have not had a dog in the White House.
We're going to have a
meow.
Yeah, Sox the cat takes over his first pet. Sox the cat.
Hey, don't mention cat around his shoulder.
Get rid of your dog.
Maybe they should leave Millie in there just to eat the cat.
That's
when it comes in.
Yeah. Chase the cat.
Yeah, that would be good.
Yeah. Big place. Hey,
Socks the cat.
Yeah, that would be the
I haven't heard that they're thinking about making a TV series about this.
Stop it! Get out!
About Socks the cat.
Where did
NBC?
You get that dog?
I don't know.
Where
he's
is that dog
always
from?
Hungry. He's climbing on Jack's leg all the time. Get it out! See, he likes that part right there. 6 minutes after 6 o'clock, Chris Ledoux, Cadillac Ranch coming up here. Reba McEntire, Doug Stone, and, oh, hey, listen, we're going to be talking more about those celebrity phone numbers from KSON.
Here you are on the porch again.
KSON FM 97.3, it's KSON in the Morning with Mike and Kathy, 6:08.
Made that little squeaking noise again.
Well, you know, when I turn my head,
don't turn your head, don't do that. Somebody's over easy eggs out there will explode,
I know. Or it'll cook them very well.
9 minutes after 6 o'clock, 6:09. We should have rain this morning, but it should be tapering off too. S-U-N-S-H-I-N-E. Now, I don't know what that word means. Yeah, there's a slight chance, especially in the hills, of a sprinkler too this morning, but it'll go away.
You promise?
I give you a pretty good estimate, yeah.
Okay.
High somewhere in the 60s right now. It's about 52 outside with some Seminole wind in your radio from KSO.
Next time, we'll hear from a former Chicago radio personality who worked at WCFL and WMAQ. He's now on the air in the mornings in San Diego. Now, back to Phil Wayne.
Thanks, Mark. Next month, we do it again as we dial onward. This is Phil for the DX Audio Service. And now, if we can find which of the lower 48 he's inhabiting, here is our favorite retiree, John Bowker.
Los Angeles.
Historical moments in radio broadcasting, bringing you stories of the early days of this exciting industry from the pages of logbooks and publications and press releases of the Federal Communications Commission, pamphlets and historical accounts by those who lived it. Hello again, I'm John Bowker, and today I want to quote from a book, A Tower in Babel, authored by Eric Barnow and printed by the Oxford University Press in 1966. It tells the story of a radio station in South Dartmouth, Massachusetts, that played a key role in the development of broadcasting. Let me set the stage for you. For the first 2 or 3 years of broadcasting, each station was on its own. There were no networks or transcribed program exchanges between stations. And then came October 1922, when WJZ in Newark and WGY in Schenectady were linked by telegraph lines for the pitch-by-pitch description of the World Series in New York. The announcer at the Schenectady Inn had to fill in when there was a lull in the action, which happened frequently. He invented things going on down in the field, because all he was receiving were dots and dashes about balls, strikes, hits, and runs. This was among the first networks of stations. And then just 5 months later, in January 1923, WEAF in New York was connected with WNAC in Boston over a telephone line for musical programs from New York. It sounded awful in Boston, because the art of line balancing and equalization was only a gleam in a few engineers' eyes back in those early days. But, as with so many events in history, a wonderful coincidence was about to happen. Enter Colonel Edward H.R. Green of South Dartmouth, Massachusetts. This is a wonderfully small town, by the way, a suburb of New Bedford, Massachusetts. Colonel Green figured he'd put the town on the map with a radio station, and indeed he did. WMAF signed on in 1923 from South Dartmouth, Massachusetts. The good colonel advertised his station by putting loudspeakers on the phone poles all over town, and people complained, as you can imagine. But they complained that WMAF was so strong, it kept them from hearing the real radio stations in New York like WEAF. Well, not to be outdone, Colonel Green went to New York and met with AT&T engineers and asked what the toll would be to run a cable from WEAF in New York up to South Dartmouth to WMAF, where he would simply rebroadcast the WEAF programs most of the time. Well, this required a huddle at AT&T, the likes of which haven't been repeated. AT&T decided it would be okay and replied that the toll would be $60,000 a year. Remember, this was 1923. The colonel said, no, that would be just fine. And within weeks, the new interconnecting cable across Long Island Sound was indeed being laid. And when the installation was completed, they turned it on, and guess what? It didn't sound so good. But seriously, it was the test bed needed by AT&T to develop its line equalization technology, and those studies went on that cable well into the 1980s. Needless to say, the colonel was not charged the $60,000 per year. In fact, by 1932, his station was completely gone and forgotten. But by the time the AT&T engineers got through with that network line, they had learned how to make transparent interconnections between stations. That's what they call high quality. And I can attest firsthand that by the late 1930s, one could set push buttons to the NBC stations, for instance, in Washington, New York, Boston, and Cleveland, and just punch between them, and the only difference you'd hear between would be a slight delay between the programming sounds, no delay or change in the technical quality between the sounds of the various stations all over the country. By the mid-1920s, the link to South Dartmouth had been expanded to Providence and Worcester, and then up into Boston. As a sidelight, by the way, when RCA first bought WJZ in Newark, AT&T refused to let RCA use the high-quality AT&T telephone lines to the network feeding Schenectady and Springfield. So Mr. Sarnoff was thwarted in his quest to rival the WEAF network that did use the high-quality network lines. As we have learned from earlier historical moment programs, Mr. Sarnoff took care of this the old-fashioned way. He bought WEAF. Just before closing this month, we should all raise our trenchers to celebrate the 70th birthdays in May of WBAP in Fort Worth, WCAO in Baltimore, and KGNC Amarillo, Texas, that went on the air May 19th, 1922. For Historical Moments in Radio, this is John Bowker.
The music sounds best on WABC.
And on our DX Audio Service telephone line here, we have Wayne Heinen from Colorado. How you doing, Wayne?
Pretty good today.
I got a question for you. You heard the comment that I made to Tom Jackson concerning the CPC. How close am I to how the CPC operates?
You're pretty much right on the money, Fred. The CPC is... At one time, it was a lot of people using a lot of typewriters to write letters to stations to get stations to come on and put tests on for the club. Now it's been more organized in the computer age to the point where we're using computers, sophisticated mail merge systems, to target and send out letters to a variety of stations to get them to test. And this... was revived about 4 or 5 years ago, and has been rather successful in getting quite a number of stations to come on so that we can log and verify them.
You know, if we send out, say, 10 letters, or well, let's just use a figure so we can work a percentage here. If we send out 100 letters to 100 different stations, approximately how many do you think would come back and say that they're willing to do a test?
9 to 11. or we'll center it right around 10%. That's been our, since I revived the program in 1987, I believe it was, I've averaged right around 10% of the letters I send out. We end up with a test. If I send out 200 letters, the club would end up with approximately 20 tests during the year.
And how many of those are willing to test at the time period where it's most advantageous for us DXers?
Usually most of them. Occasionally we'll have somebody come back and say that it would be more convenient for them to do it on a particular day other than what we have suggested. Generally, though, they do come back. They may change the day, but they'll leave the time period somewhere around what we have usually suggested. It depends on usually the station personnel and what their schedules are.
And I understand that sometimes we've actually sent them the tapes that we would like rebroadcast, the code IDs and the march music and things. Is that a fair assessment?
Yes, that's correct. Generally speaking, many of the stations use Morse code IDs that are produced right here at my home. I've got a key here and I've got a code oscillator, and if the station does not have any facilities or does not have a ham radio operator around to do code IDs, I generally make them up myself and ship them out. Occasionally we've had stations that have requested that they would do it if we would supply an entire tape. In the past, Jerry Starr has been very helpful in making up a pre-recorded half an hour and shipping it off to a station, and then they just run it at the given time.
You know, in the last two issues, this issue and the last one, Jim Snowbarger played some examples of CPC tests where people have heard the stations and have sent in cassette tapes. Do you think that sending in a cassette tape to a station is helpful to the station and not only us?
It is, especially in cases when the reception is more marginal, especially when the only thing you're getting is a very weak voice and Morse code. Many of the station personnel really have no idea what's at the other end of, say, a 500-mile path. Jim's test that he arranged with KLEE went coast-to-coast with 500 watts, which to me was a reason for us to start looking at targeting some of the smaller stations throughout the country, because even though they are, you know, of low wattage, KLEE's test that Jim arranged was extremely successful.
It's probably safe to assume that, you know, it's not just the 5,000 and 10,000 and 50,000 watt stations that are going to be good to test, but some of these lower power stations too, wouldn't you think?
That's right. We had KEWI in Benton, Arkansas on this year, and they're directional, so that they did cut out a portion of the country. But they're a 500-watt station, and they got out rather successfully. KLEE, Jim's test, was widely heard. I understand that it did go coast to coast, and for 500 watts, that's pretty good.
You know, with some of these different powers that these stations are using, the PSA and PRSA powers, can you just think off the top of your head, what is the lowest power station that is tested? I remember back 1982, when I was working for WHND up in Detroit, Monroe, Michigan. We actually ran a test at 3 o'clock in the morning, and we used the 65 watts PSA power. Has any other stations tested with that low power?
I believe we had one or two this past year, and I'd have to go back through the test determine who they were, but we had a couple that used all their powers. They used a low night power, a PSA or PRSA power, and they also used a PSSA power that was I want to say somewhere on the order of 10 or 12 watts, and they used them in 15-minute increments over the course of an hour. And then, of course, we had the other test that Jim Snowbarger arranged, which was the WMT test, where they went from their non-directional day to their directional night, which would obviously change the signal in various areas of the country.
It was interesting to note from Jim's tapes that CWID tends to break through the noise. I guess we're going to do that on future tests as well, huh?
We have been trying to get as many stations to run code IDs as possible because of the fact that with the band conditions, that tone will really cut through. There's instances here. Dave Schmidt ran a test on WKEN in Delaware on 1600, and I'm on a fight on that bulletin board, and my systems operator happens to be the chief engineer of my local on 1600, and he stood by for that test, and that's my only Delaware from Colorado. And I believe that station was 500 watts.
And stood by means that basically they go off the air for a short period of time, correct?
Right. They shut the transmitter down for approximately 1 hour during the half an hour window of the test. The following year, we had a test from an Indiana station on 1600. And Jerry Westerberg over at that time, KRXY 1600, shut it down at midnight our local time, so that myself, Jeff, and John Wilkins all logged the Indiana test. And then he came on at 2:30 Eastern and presented a DX test for the club under that call. In fact, next season I hope to get him back on the air. They've since changed calls to KWMX, and of course everybody loves a call change. So we'll have to see if we can get Jerry to stand by for something next year and put the station on for another test.
How many different, you know, there's all kinds of different radio clubs around the United States, Canada, and the world. How many different radio clubs do these tests?
Exactly two.
Two, okay, and that's the National Radio Club and?
The IRCA.
And what do you think the success rates are for the two different clubs?
Well, lately, our current stats that we're looking at for NRC and the stats that were published recently in an IRCA bulletin, the IRCA, frankly, has had more contributions and sent out more tests, or sent out more letters, and therefore had more tests. The recent IRCA bulletin showed that IRCA sent out approximately 360 letters with a 12% test rate last season, and NRC sent out, I don't quite have the final exact figures, somewhere between 150 and 200 letters, and we ended up, I think, with 16 tests this year.
Well, Wayne, what can National Radio Club DX Audio Service members to do to improve our ratio? There's obviously something that we can do that's not going to break the pocketbook, yet help out the club.
Well, right now, what we've looked at is we really do need an increase in donations to the program in the form of stamps. We accept either money or stamps. But for the average DXAS member, a book of stamps is not all that much money. I think it's, you know, a little right around $5.80 or something. If we had one book of stamps from each DXAS member, Jeff would be a very busy boy next year.
That would really help out, huh?
Yep. And because what we've looked at is by looking at our own returns, by looking at the past successes of the IRCA, if their funding level continues and our funding level increases, we could look at 60 DX tests for the 1993-94 season.
And if I understand it right, it's not the amount of stamps that a person gives, it's just the fact that you get a few from everyone, right?
Mm-hmm. If we got 10 stamps at $2.90 from each DXAS member, I believe that would be somewhere over 1,000 stamps. Well, if we have 1,000 stamps, it takes 2 stamps per letter. One to mail it, one for return postage. But that's still 500 letters. That would outdo the combined, that would be the combined output of both clubs last year.
And the interesting thing to point out is that usually a member who is listening to this tape right now in our conversation would think that, well, I don't need to send in stamps because somebody else will send them in. I think that's a correct thing to estimate, isn't it?
Many people do. And we always had the old one in the military of letting George do it. And in this case, CPC has nobody named George, And if we only rely on the Georges in the club and you go through the membership list, there really aren't that many Georges out there that are going to be able to fund the program at the level that we would like to have it funded next year.
Well, I hope that each DX Audio Service member can send in, a small book of stamps, 10 stamps, or whatever they can spare, and that would help out. Do you still need suggestions for stations, too?
Yes, yes. Especially if someone knows someone. The CPC worked in conjunction with Jim Snowbarger to arrange the tests at WMT and KLEE. Jim did a lot of good front PR work, having, knowing the people there and letting us know that those people were there. Basically, that in itself, anyone who is in contact with a station that might be willing to test, if they don't know exactly the procedures and how to set it up, that's when they need to get with us. Just drop us a note, and we'll be happy to follow up. And, of course, we will reference the member who has, done the front work. That really helps a lot of times, because station personnel, when they get a letter, a lot of times if the letter is a follow-up on something that's been done by somebody who they know or who they've met through the hobby, it creates a very good success rate. In Jim's case, Jim's had a lot of contact with the stations and has been able to really get some good insight for the membership by listening to the tapes, seeing what's in the letters, this kind of thing that... station personnel, when there's real personal involvement, it really creates a camaraderie between the hobbyist and the stations. And the good PR that's generated is very good. So if anybody knows of a particular station or knows someone at a station that has been especially friendly to DXers, those are really good leads sometime for tests. And it may be your local station. I mean, those are Jim's local stations, but KLEE for me is DX.
I can understand that. I'd like to point out, too, to our DX Audio Service members that if you do participate in a CPC test by just listening for the test and you don't hear the station, I think it's a good idea that you at least write to the station and thank them for putting on the test, because it did take some of their time, and in most cases, somebody's got to be paid to go to the radio station to turn on the transmitter and do the test. So thank you isn't too much to ask to send them a little card or a letter. And speaking of sending cards and letters, Wayne, who do we send stamps and suggestions to?
Our CPC chairman is Jeff Tynan. His last name is spelled T-Y-N-A-N. And his address is 10359 Severance, and that's S-E-V-E-R-A-N-C-E Drive. And he's in Parker, Colorado, P-A-R-K-E-R. And the zip code there is 80134.
And is there anything else we need to do for CPC to make your life and Mr. Tynan's life a lot easier?
Well, actually, if you send in a lot of stamps, you'll make our lives a little busier. And that we'd like that.
But you'd like the stamps.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
That's right.
And speaking of other things, how about the logbook? Do you still need some information concerning corrections and things that are going on with AM stations?
Absolutely. In the last couple of weeks, I have received from some of the people whose names are in the front of the last logbook, they've been going back through the logbook and checking their local stations, and when they do hear something different, they've been compiling them and getting them in letters. I got two letters, as a matter of fact, yesterday, with about a half dozen changes each. If you do know of something that has changed on a local station, be it that they've moved and they have a new mailing address or they've changed their phone number, some stations may have been unable to get a number that matches their frequency. And then when a number does become available, they'll just go ahead and change phone numbers. So if you have a current phone book for your area, go through and look up the business office phone number, which is the one we carry in the logbook. And as long as you're using a fairly current phone book, any of those changes you can jot down. Also, we are beginning to list as much as possible physical addresses of studios and offices of station. And if we're currently carrying a P.O. box and you have a a street address out of a phone book. We'd like that too, so that we can correlate the two and carry both addresses, especially for those NRCUs who travel and like to stop in and visit stations. It's a lot easier to have that address right in the logbook.
It'd probably be a good idea for our members who do some traveling, maybe just when they're sitting in a hotel room at night or something, just to kind of give you brief information out of the phone book or personal observations off the air, and then just send a postcard to you.
Yep, that works very well. Jeff, who is an airline pilot with United, every time he hits a new city, the first thing he does is pull out the logbook, and the night he has to lay over, he goes through and checks everything, and then comes back and gives me a sheet of paper with all the changes on it. So, you know, if you are somebody who travels a lot, that's a nice way to help out your fellow members by keeping the logbook as current as we can possibly get it.
Wayne, thanks a lot for the information concerning CPC and the log, and we'll be looking forward to talking with you next month.
Okay, just one more thing. The logbook changes go to me, and my address is 4131 South Andes Way, and that's in Aurora, A-U-R-O-R-A, Colorado, 80013. And we would appreciate it if you'd use my address for the log and Jeff's address for CPC, because with our varied schedule, sometimes if you send something here that's CPC related, Jeff may not get it for a week or two. So, because we're not all that close, even though we're both in Colorado. So we'd appreciate if you'd keep those addresses in mind and send your stamps to Jeff and your logbook updates to me.
Thank you very much, Wayne.
You're welcome, Fred, and we'll see you next month.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Don't forget, next month we'll have the winner of our Jingle Jungle number 2, that station which is on 1500, that 62, 65 or something like that, had the call sign WJ something, and you got to tell us what those last two letters are. We'll have the winner on the next edition of the DX Audio Service and Jingle Jungle number 2. I'd like to fill you in on a couple of things which were going on at the National Association of Broadcasters Convention. Some of the new technology which I was able to view there. First of all, AMAX stereo. AMAX, I'll tell you, that is a sophisticated, good-sounding system there for AM stations. And I surely hope that it does not get put into the back burner, so to speak, as some of the other AM projects have done. Also got to see something very interesting by Motorola Communications, and Motorola has a new device out which is connecting up to a in-dash car radio, which actually takes the impulse noise from the engine and deletes it. And they had a spark plug device which was sitting there, and of course without the unit enacted or enabled, you'd sit there and hear the pick, 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 pick on the AM radio. When they turned on the filter, you would not hear any of that noise at all. On the FM side, RDBS seems to be the wave of the future for FM stations. RDBS is a signal which is encoded onto the FM carrier along with the broadcast in a subcarrier mode. And it enables receivers which have a small LCD display to display, say, the slogan or the call letters or frequency of the station. And this, a lot of stations feel, is important, with Arbitron making the make or break of a radio station as far as the numbers that they're pulling in of audience. With this, you can also broadcast weather warnings and traffic information, a lot of other things. So RDBS looks like it's going to be coming very soon to an FM station near you. The satellite radio system, digital radio, whatever you want to call it, DAB, that is still in a mixed-up mode. My personal feelings are that if it comes down to satellite broadcasting, I think that that will be the death of radio as we know it, because it's going to take away all the locality, all the civic pride, and all the community spirit which a radio station normally has, and just basically make it nothing more than just a jukebox which is coming out of the heavens. If they take digital radio and make it a terrestrial type of transmission, which several broadcasters will be able to do on their own and have certain areas, I don't think that the mode is going to be allowed to favor like a clear channel station would, where it's covering a large amount of populace. But certainly the transmission could be characteristics of a Class 4 AM, a non-directional 60-mile coverage. age. And if it comes to that, I think that radio will basically expand out into a third band, AM, FM, and digital. And I think it will live very well amongst the, should we say, older technologies. On the television forefront, it looks like the year 2007 is going to be picked out as the day when NTSC is officially taken out of service. What is happening with digital television is that high-definition television is kind of going by the wayside, and it's going into a digital mode, and they're looking for the technology and also how they're going to allot the spectrum for those broadcasters to transmit video and audio digitally. And to do that, of course, there's going to have to be a complete restructuring of the band, as well as a compatibility. Let's face it, the NTSC format was started in the United States, and the PAL format in Europe was actually a better format. Had we waited a couple years and selected PAL, we probably would be very happy with it. But swinging into the digital mode has a lot of pluses and minuses. One thing which is kind of interesting in that if we go to a digital service or HD TV service, there will be no VHF television stations. Channels 2 through 13 will be abandoned, and all the stations that are currently assigned to channels 2 through 13 will be moved up into the UHF spectrum. For example, here in Lima, Ohio, there are two stations, channel 35 and channel 44. Now, the two channels which have been selected for HD TV slash digital are channels 56 and 65. And as I understand it, what they'll do is basically toss a coin, or we'll have first pick of it at channel 35, and select one of the new frequencies. However, down in Dayton, where you have a channel 2 and a channel 7, I believe there's a 9 down in Cincinnati and a few others. Well, in Dayton, they're going to have channels, I believe it's 30, 31, and 33, which the users are going to be moved to. So it's going to be very interesting, and I think that a lot of us in the broadcasting business are going to have great fun in trying to figure out exactly what's going to happen and how all the frequencies are going to get allotted, and how radio is going to make itself into the next century.
More music in Cleveland. WIXY.
And that just about wraps up this edition of the DX Audio Service for May 1993. I'd like to apologize for sending this out late to many of you, as I was in Las Vegas, Nevada for the 1993 National Association of Broadcasters Convention and wanted to be sure that I got back and got all this information on tape, which I thought you might find interesting on high-definition television and digital radio and all the other kind of things. We also have a lot of things which we recorded while at the NAB Convention, and we'll have those on After Dark number 4, amongst other material. So basically what you need to do is just stay tuned to your DX Audio Service. We'll let you know when AD4 is out to press, and you can order that and find out all about what goes on in the world of technology and things, and we'll have a lot of other interesting things we're going to be doing on the DX Audio Service After Dark. And with that, we'll just roll right off the end of the tape here, and by telling you that the DX Audio Service is a copyrighted feature of the National Radio Club Incorporated, and you can reach us at the DX Audio Service, Great Northern Broadcast Company, Post Office Box 5031, Lima, Ohio 45802, U.S. of A. And let's see if we can get another jingle in here before. Yeah, I like that jingle there. Our telephone number, if you'd like to give us a call, is area code 419-228-4199. 73, good DX.